kind of a show are you guys putting on here today?
The Picture Show on News Talk.
Again, 1613. Shakespeare obviously was the sort of great dramatist of the time. Was he based in London? Was he based in the theatre in London?
He was, yeah. He lived most of the 20 years up to that time in London. He did visit Stratford, and the marriage that continued through that time, you know, and the family that he had, he did see. But he was predominantly London-based for the whole of those 20 years until this traumatizing event of the destruction of his theatre, yeah.
Yeah. And was that ever worked out, how it happened?
Yes, absolutely, specifically, Act 1, Scene 3, and it was a faulty stage effect. It was a stage cannon that went off, and sparks from it, because it sort of misfired, went into the thatch, and it went up. So 3,000 punters in the theatre that day. Nobody died. Everybody got out except one man whose bottom was singed. It's apparently a popular report states it and said, of course, it was rather cruel, you know, but people laughed about it because it was the man's bottom. That's just the nature of it. But he was the only one who suffered. But it was a kind of, it was both devastating, but it was a miracle nobody died. But it certainly sent him back home.
Yeah. Well, he went back home. And what was the reason for that? Obviously, he wasn't afraid of being blown up again.
I think that he was 37 plays in of his own, wherever possible collaborations with people across numerous ones of those. He'd been an actor and a producer of many other people's plays. I think he was worn out. They'd already had one incident with his experience there, where when they were playing on the north side of the river and new laws came in and the plague was at work also, they transferred the entire theatre across one night to the south of the south of the river to Bankside and started all over again. So I think that he had made titanic efforts across that time, and I think he was bushed, and I think he was at a moment in his life where we choose to suggest in this film that maybe there were unresolved issues, if I can talk in psychobabble for a minute, that he might want to attend to in real life rather than merely through his plays.
Yeah. Now, where did it come from? Did Ben Elton do it and come to you, or what happened?
I pitched him the idea. We'd been talking about doing something together across the years with several plays and screenplays that didn't get off the ground. But we met first when he came to see Much Ado About Nothing in the West End that I was in and Judi Dench had directed, and he thought we'd made things up. He said that we'd definitely been changing the lines. I said, no, this is Shakespeare's naturalism. This is Judi Dench's production style to be this kind of direct, and you should go back to the source. He did, and then years later he produced this very funny sitcom, Upstart Crow. I went to be in it as a guest in one of the episodes, and pitched him this idea of, now that he was so Shakespeare literate, he'd done all his swatting up, maybe he'd be interested in doing a drama. He'd written so many novels that contained great dramatic scenes that I thought he could make a very dramatic screenplay, and so he did.
Was makeup a big issue?
Yeah, I mean the goal was to try and look as much like the famous image of him in something called the Chandos Portraits in the National Portrait Gallery in London, with that high forehead and the long hair and a nose that some commentators at the time and subsequently found disappointing. They didn't expect that kind of nose on one of England's great heroes, because it felt too exotic, they suggested, you know, too European, in fact, and so the goal was to do that. Because I go along with those who believe that that portrait by John Taylor probably is one that he could have sat for, and I wanted to get me out of the way and risk looking like anybody else, including Bernard Hill or Ben Kingsley. A few people have said to me as well, but I'm flattered to be in the company of both of them, frankly. But the main thing was to try and, I think, help suggest a transformation that would be part of the audience's journey in getting away from what they might have expected into something different.
Yeah. Would you mention Judi Dench? Obviously, she's been in loads, dozens of things that you've done. Has she?
Yes, indeed. Probably we've worked together maybe 11 times, and she was such an absolutely integral member of this project because she has a lifetime experience of performing Shakespeare. She's lived in Stratford. She used to have a cottage across the road from Shalcott Manor where Sir Thomas Lucy lived, who has a pop at Shakespeare in this version of events. She's a little older than me, and Anne Hathaway is 8 years older than Shakespeare historically, and the sort of shorthand that we have as performers and the trust meant that we could plan something like this, and I could say to Judy, look, we'll never rehearse this, by the way. We can talk about it now. You can ask me any question you want with a couple of weeks to go, but when we get there on the day, we'll sit down and I will switch the cameras on and we'll start shooting. Because she's someone, and she's worked with him actually, who is the kind of person that Clint Eastwood referred to as a fast startup actor. So they really get going quick, and I've learned with Judy is like the blue touch paper and stand back.
The Earl of Southampton, the character played by Ian McKellen in the film, there's a suggestion of a romantic relationship there. Was there one?
Shakespeare dedicated the sonnets and Venus and Adonis, this other collection of narrative poems, to Southampton very extravagantly, and the poems themselves have a very passionate, some would say personal, paean of romantic love to, in some cases, a dark lady, but mostly to a fair youth. So the idea that Anne Hathaway could be threatened or even feel humiliated at this secret dedication and secret love affair with Southampton is something that I think Ben uses brilliantly to just throw the audience. If they were expecting a straight-on heterosexual marriage and family drama, suddenly in the middle a rather more modern twist comes along. He might leave her, but for another man.
Before we go, could you say something about Albert Finney, whose death was recorded today? I think he was 82.
Yeah. Albert Finney's an actor I admired enormously. I had the great good fortune in my very first job in the theatre to be produced by him. He was an investor in a play called Another Country, which Rupert Everett and I had the good fortune to star in. Pat O'Connor worked with us a little later on another project, I was very lucky to do a month in the country with Pat O'Connor, which I did with Colin Firth. But Albert Finney was someone who had what I would call a sort of a career of honor. You know, he really went from medium to medium. He was a great theater guy. He was a great film guy. He directed films. He was always his own man. You know, he turned down the role of Lawrence in Lawrence of Arabia, and his fellow RADA classmate, Peter O'Toole, played it. Yeah. So he was singular in his choices, not an inch of regret about that. He was his own man. As he once said to me, he liked to eat, drink, and be merry. And in his company, you always were.
Well, it's a great pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks very much.
The Picture Show.
Is this where I'm going to be a star?
On News Talk.